The drive continues, and we're about to bring the man in, but not before the intro. That's right, baby. It is time for the drive that's been with you for many years with my good buddy Ross Turetsky and myself, Dan Tortora. And I've been bringing you through the drive here on the show. And if we're talking about the tournament, we're calling it the drive. And if Ross can't be on that day, then we're doing it with him in spirit. The drive, D, capital D for my name, capital R for Ross. Speaking on the 2024 NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Tournament, picture in picture, proudly presented by Great Lakes Honda City on 7140 Henry Clay Boulevard in Liverpool, New York. I am here with my brother, one of the best in the world at being a human, plus a good sportscaster, a good writer. To some of you, I think he's great. So I'm going to say great. You can say good. I'm going to say great. Pick your poison. And the Luzerne County Community College head baseball coach, Mr. Turetsky. How are you?
Let's go, Yankees!
It's funny how you're...
5-4 win over those stinky, cheating Houston Astros. They're banging those trash cans. It doesn't matter. Juan Soto, our new addition, threw you out at home plate in the ninth inning. Saves the day. Yankees win. The Yankees win. 5-4. And shout out to your Arizona Diamondbacks, the reigning National League champions, trying to take the whole crown this year, win the World Series, 16-1, butt kicking of the Colorado Rockies, their NL West rivals, late last night in some West Coast baseball that I watched some of and had you in mind, thinking that, oh, you're going to be pumped when you wake up and know that the Diamondbacks just got a big opening day victory. So both our teams won. There's more baseball today, and on the East Coast, two games that got rained out. Phillies are at home against the Braves. The Mets are at home against the Milwaukee Brewers. So baseball in Philly and New York today. And just excited. Major League Baseball is back and better than ever. And I know there's the whole Shohei Ohtani scandal that's still up in the air. But as a Yankee fan, I'm ecstatic. Big victory against the Astros, who have tormented my Yankees year after year in the playoffs, whether it be cheating or not cheating. They've beaten them in the playoffs like four times in the last like seven seasons. And finally, just for one day, we get a nice victory. They were down 4-0. They scored 5 straight runs and win the game. Biggest comeback victory on opening day for the Yankees since 1950, so 74 years ago. So no big whoop.
Yeah, you know, and great win for the Yankees. And like you said, for the Arizona Diamondbacks, they just kept going. You know, and they had a game like this in the postseason where they just kept pouring on the runs and pouring on the runs. And you're like, it's the first inning. It's one out in the first inning. How is this happening? So with the people saying it's a fluke, they'll never do it again. Oh, you should just be happy last year because the Diamondbacks
spend the money, buddy. Yeah. They just got one of my former Yankee studs, Jordan Montgomery, who was on the Texas Rangers last year, who beat the Diamondbacks in the World Series. He just, the last minute, right at the end of spring training, missed all spring training, signed a one-year, $25 million contract to join your Diamondbacks. So a terrific lefty pitcher, reminds me of Andy Pettit. As a Yankee fan, I desperately wanted him back in the Bronx. He's a great addition for your Diamondbacks. So they're spending money, too.
Yeah, no, Luis Gurriel Jr., making sure that they wrapped him up. And he started off the 2024 season with 5 RBIs in the opening day game. So 5 RBIs right now. He's in great positioning as we step forward. They looked at all their players that were, you know, designated for arbitration, and I think they brought back all but one. And then, you know, you think about everything they've done, and I said they needed to add a pitcher for game 4 of a series, right? Game 4 in the postseason, they needed another pitcher. They added 2 pitchers. So they add Eduardo, they add Jordan. And I mean, Montgomery, I believe I was there in Arizona when he was pitching so well against the Diamondbacks. So I wanted them to add one pitcher. They added 2. I wanted them to keep the team together. They did that. And what people are also forgetting is everything the Diamondbacks achieved last year. Take take all of that. Take Zach Gallen. Take Merrill Kelly. Take Brandon Pfaadt. Add in those other 2 pitchers. Take all that hitting, take Corbin Carroll's rookie season, and add in the fact that Jordan Lawler wasn't on that team last year. He was in the farm system. So what the Diamondbacks have been and what they can be, I'm ecstatic. And Ross, he finally did it. okay? Ross slash the Diamondbacks, and you know, finally did this.
I got you hooked to baseball. It took 16 years to know you to forget you're obsessed with baseball.
Like, yeah, because I always loved my Diamondbacks, but I never was this excited and this passionate and this focused on the entire league. And now I am. And I am, I mean, I wanted spring training. I always joke with Ross because he'll send me like 100 days until baseball is back and I say fake news. I didn't do
the next day after the season's over, I'm sending you updates like a psychopath. So about countdowns to the next season.
Well, and it's funny because you know, you would send 100 days and I would write fake news. If you realize this year, I did not write fake news. I said, I literally looked at my dad when they lost the World Series, speaking of the Diamondbacks, I looked at my dad and I said, I've never wanted baseball to come back more than right now in this moment. I wanted the season to continue the day after. I wanted to go back to the drawing board the day after. And being able to sit with the Syracuse Mets and their manager, Dick Scott, yesterday, and Drew Gilbert, one of their prospects here for the Mets, to be able to sit with them yesterday, and those interviews are going to air today on all of our channels here.
Yeah. Gilbert is a top prospect. He's going to be up in Queens playing for the New York Mets this season, and he looks like he's ready to go. So they got him in a trade last year. I think it was in the Justin Verlander trade. Top prospect. He is legit, and he's coming to Queens real soon, and he's going to, I think, be good for many years to come for the New York Mets.
Yeah, and I mean, so to get to talk with him, to get to sit there and see, you know, the pinstripes and the Mets across the chest, and to sit with the manager yesterday, the Syracuse Mets, and to speak with Drew, and to be on the field, you know, it's just a different experience of me going into this season more than any other season. And, you know, the last time I was in a stadium besides being at the Syracuse Mets yesterday was when I was at the World Series with my dad at Chase Field in Arizona for Game 3. And it was, I felt like I was like Mowgli from the Jungle Book. I've grown up with all these things that don't look like me and act like me, and yet I found a way to assimilate. And then I went to a place where everybody looked like me and talked like me, and I'm like, there's 40,000 Arizona Diamondbacks fans I've grown up with. They're just being me. And when I left that stadium, when I left Chase Field, my favorite, next to being there with my dad, my second favorite part of that experience was when we were leaving. And there's just a ton of just people, thousands of people just leaving the field like ants, just like people everywhere. And I heard somebody yell, "Let's go D-backs." And then people start chanting after they lost. And then somebody was like, "It's okay. We got it. We figured it out before. This isn't the first time we've been down. We're going to be okay." And I went, not only do I feel like Pinocchio and now I'm realizing I'm a real boy and being around these Arizona Diamondback fans, but they were positive.
Yeah.
And I looked at my dad and I was like, not only do I feel like I'm finally like this beacon of light, I finally have seen the other side of the rainbow, but they were positive in a loss. And that made me feel even better about the fan base that I've been a part of since they came into fruition, that the team that I love so dearly has fans that will defend them and love them even when they lose. That meant the world to me. And, you know, so not just for the team and not just for me, but for the rest of the D-back fan base, I hope we get Arizona rocking again in late October, November this year.
There's so much hope there. And the Snakes in Arizona, the D-backs, they're ready to go. And they added so many good players. They were good to begin with. So excited for that. Just pumped for baseball. There's so many cool stories, a lot of great young players, guys who still haven't been called up yet. We're probably going to get called up later in the year. We're going to make a big difference, but so many cool stories. We'll see if the Dodgers are the juggernaut they are, because they spent like $1 billion this offseason. We'll see.
Yeah,
you don't play it on paper. You got to do it on the field. The Dodgers, besides the shortened 60-game COVID season in 2020, they have failed in the playoffs over and over again, no matter how much money they spend. If they continue to do that, the manager's jobs could be on the line, because they brought in so much talent with Ohtani and Yamamoto and all these guys. So that's going to be interesting to see how they gel. The Astros are always very competitive no matter what. The Tampa Bay Rays are always good no matter how little money they spend. The Pirates look like a nice up-and-coming team. That would be great because they haven't been good for a long time. So there's so many cool stories, so many great young players. And I really, as a Yankee fan, just want to see Aaron Judge Juan Soto together, see like a Roger Maris, Mickey Mantle, the M&M boys, to see those two together. It's going to be exciting. Giancarlo Stanton should have a big rebound season. A lot of good things. The only thing with the Yankees is they have some injuries. DJ LeMay was hurt, and Garrett Cole's out till at least June. So you got to hope Garrett Cole can come back because the pitching's a little iffy. But otherwise else, their offense looks amazing out there. So it's going to be a great season, long way to go. But you couldn't be happier for both of our teams opening day, respectively. Great way to begin the season.
Yeah, opening the season, opening the season on a comeback for you and a just almost 20 runs on my side. Wearing my Serpientes, by the way. This is the Hispanic Heritage Month when we flip to the Serpientes, which means snakes in Spanish. So on my beautiful, wonderful Spanish side of my blood to support this, and I have a couple Serpientes. My dad. He loves me and I love him. And in these last couple of years, my Arizona Diamondback wardrobe has gotten exponentially just insanely awesome, thanks to Pops. And one of the greatest feelings in the world, and you can appreciate this from us connecting in this case, my dad is a Yankee fan. My grandfather up in heaven, God bless Pop Miller, he's a Yankee fan, but my dad looked at me and he goes, when we go to the World Series, he's like, I'm going to buy some stuff. And I was like, you're going to wear Arizona stuff? He goes, yeah, if I'm going to be there, absolutely. And when we left, I go, Dad, I feel this. And I was like, you can tell me where you're at, but I this is what I'm thinking. I said, I know you're a Yankee fan, but are you a Diamondback fan? And he said, I'll put it to you like this. Every game the Diamondbacks play that they don't play the Yankees, I'm rooting for your team. So my dad is a Yankee and he is a Diamondback number two. Yeah. And that is one of the greatest victories of my life. So,
and hey, the time when they won the World Series in 2001, that was against the Yankees after 9/11. All of the America, all the world was rooting for New York. And it was an amazing 7-game World Series, great comeback victories late in the games, extra innings, Mr. November, Derek Jeter. But in the end, the Arizona Diamondbacks won against the greatest closer of all time, the only player to be have every single 100% vote to go to the Hall of Fame, Mariano Rivera. Diamondbacks beat them, and that was that year in 2001. Diamondbacks beat the Yankees in the World Series. And what's kind of funny is Billy Crystal, I don't know if he still is, but back then, he's a diehard, beloved Yankee fan. For his 60th birthday in 2008, he got to take an at-bat in an actual spring training game. I think he fouled off a couple of pitches and struck out against the Pirates. And he's also, was a part-time owner of the Arizona Diamondbacks. So he was wearing Yankee and Diamondback stuff there at the World Series. Loves his Yankees since he was a little boy growing up in New York, but also was a part-Diamondbacks owner, so he was rooting for them. So got to be torn that way. So, that will always be one of the most memorable World Series ever. And right now, the only one that they've won so far in Arizona, I think they're going to win more in the next few years. Arizona beating my Yankees that World Series. I still remember it. Sophomore in high school. I was so happy for the Diamondbacks and Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling, all those great Diamondbacks, Luis Gonzalez, but I was also heartbroken as a diehard Yankee fan, so I had a mixture of emotions for that World Series.
Yeah, and you just gave me another reason to think that Billy Crystal and I should be friends, because I've been reading his book, which is called Still Fooling Him, and it's an awesome book, but the more I read it, the more I'm like, my passion for comedy, my passion for sports, my passion for people and learning and telling stories and building relationships and making the world small and chasing your dreams and then waking up in the morning and going, like, this is my life, this, thank God every day, that type of stuff that he talks about in his book just makes me feel like I think there's a place in this world for Billy Crystal and I to have some time together. I would love for the opportunity to do that. But just know that, Mr. Crystal, you have my support for the many wonderful things that he's done. And he just seems like a genuine guy. So
he does. And a quick recommendation. Besides all the great comedies, when Harry Met Sally, Beauty Slickers, all the great movies, Analyze This and That with Robert De Niro, check out, he directed. He's not in the movie. He directed the movie. His daughter's in the movie. 61, about Roger Maris, Mickey Mantle, the home run chase in 1961 to beat Babe Ruth's record. Of course, years later, 61 years later, 2022, Aaron Judge broke it with 62 home runs. It's a great movie. I think it's on HBO Max. Check it out. It's still a great movie. And Billy Crystal has only directed a few films. He directed 61, check it out. It's still a great movie to this day, and I love it. As a baseball fan, you can't go wrong with that movie.
No, no, I mean, there's a lot of great stuff that has Billy Crystal's name on it, and he's been awesome. He's been absolutely awesome. So go and check out his work. Check out 61. Ross and I are here inside of the Drive to speak on the 2024 NCAA Division I men's basketball tournament.
I had my phone going on with baseball and the TV on with late night college basketball. The last game of the night with Illinois making it to the Elite Eight, first time in 19 years. I think the game ended right before 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And the game was being played in Boston on the East Coast.
Yeah.
I was watching both and trying to get as much tournament action and baseball action as I could last night.
Yeah, no, it was crazy. And I like watching picture in picture. I have YouTube TV and I enjoy watching the picture in picture and picture in picture. I've always wanted to have the Matrix. So, you know, I don't want the Matrix. When I say I want the Matrix, I want the screens to be able to watch everything I want to watch. I do not want artificial intelligence to take over. I do not want to be connected to a system. I already feel like something happened this past week where I was saying something. I think I was saying something about dating and about experiences I've had. And then I was like, wait, I think I figured it out. And then I was on the phone and I'm like, did I just break the Matrix? Did I break the Matrix? So I mean,
out, something will go wrong. Do not jinx yourself. No one on this earth, they thought they figured out. You'll never have 100% figured out in your lifetime. It's just impossible.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and it doesn't make you feel good as a single man when you're like, I just want a woman who's good and she's not crazy. And then so many women look at you and they go, we're all crazy. You know, just like, don't, like, why do you have to give me that Heath Ledger Joker? Like, you know, Michael Caine, some people just want to watch the world burn. Like, I mean, I know that there's somebody out there, because God wouldn't make me this way if I couldn't find my equal. And I'm not looking to be
better. You'll find your Harley Quinn very soon. You might be your own Joker. You will find your Harley Quinn in the very near future.
And a funny thing is, I dated a girl who dressed up like Harley Quinn and I dressed up like the Joker. And then she went to bed at 8 o'clock. And I was like, you spent $162 to play yourself for Halloween. That was kind of a waste of money. But I mean, I liked being the Joker. It was fun. I mean, I don't like what he does in the movies, but it was interesting to dress up. The funny thing is, my godson, Noah, I dress up like the Joker. And a few years later, they're like, he can't wait to show you his costume. And I show up and he's not only the Joker, he's wearing the kid version of the exact same Joker suit that I bought. And it was the 115 millionth reason that this child has continued to make me believe that we're the same human being. So I definitely can appreciate Noah, and I always shout him out every chance I get because he's a good kid. And you know, I love all my nieces and nephews, including Lorelai and Mr. LJ. So when we're getting into this and we're looking at the picture and picture and picture and picture. Yesterday it was picture and picture and then a little break and then picture and picture. So I was watching the games and I realized, as much as I love picture and picture, I have to focus on like one thing because you know, like, so I, and the games were outside of UConn, who's just, you know, killing everybody.
Competition right now, I still have very little confidence that if you pick, give me UConn or the field, even with getting closer down to the Elite Eight real soon, I don't see anyone beating UConn. They just look like an NBA team out there against children. So maybe that will be different. Maybe they'll get too cocky for themselves. I think they're the only team that could beat them is themselves. If they get too cocky and they believe that they could just show up and put no effort in. If they tie their shoelaces, aren't food poisoned, and they're good to go, I think they wipe the floor with everyone they play. They're just that good.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, Dan Hurley, yeah, first and foremost, he's the only coach that I've seen be very comfortable swearing in press conferences. And also.
And he's got a swag.
Yeah.
He's cocky. I know we're going to destroy these teams. He's not shying away from like, oh, we're going to try our best. He's like, no, we're going to kick their butts and we're going to show them how good we are. And he's not shying away from it. He got your respect because they back it up every time.
Well, and that's the thing. That's what I was just going to mention is, you know, like, he is cocky. You know, I mean, he's definitely cocky. If Syracuse was still in the Big East, with like the fact that Syracuse still twitches when they think about UConn, and UConn about them. If Syracuse is in the Big East right now and Jim Boeheim was coaching against Dan Hurley, Syracuse fans would be losing their minds because he's like, we're a well-oiled, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, we're a well-oiled machine. We're great on defense. We're great on offense. We do all these things go. We do this. We do that. I mean, like, he is, the team's prepared.
Yeah.
He's just out there publicly like, we're good. Like, what do you want me to tell you? Like, we're a really good team. We're really friggin' like, we're awesome. And, you know, like, we're just in a different world than everybody. I mean, and it's just, it's kind of like, if and when they win the championship, he's going to be like, well, I told you so. I told you we were good. And I mean, when you look at last night in the Sweet 16, there was four games played last night for the first of 2 days of the Sweet 16.
That was the only non-competitive game. It was
over. Well, and that was the thing. It's like three out of four games that were played last night for the right to go to the Elite Eight were decided by 1 to 2 possessions. Alabama beat North Carolina 89-87. Clemson beat Arizona 77-72. And Illinois beat Iowa State 72-69. Every one of those games was 1 to 2 possessions. 2 points, 5 points, 3 points. If you add up all of those games, 2, 5, and 3, that's 10 points. If you add all of those games, the point differential times 3 is what UConn won by. You got a one-possession game, a one-possession game, and a two-possession game. UConn over San Diego State, a rematch of the national championship from last year. Same coaches, some of the same guys on the team. UConn won the game 82-52. I mean, this is a sweet. This is not them playing a team that won a play-in game. This is not them playing a round of 32 game. This is not 1 versus 16 seed. This is UConn playing the darling of the Mountain West. This is UConn playing the last team of the six that made it in of the Mountain West, which had no business getting six in. But this was the last team. This was the identifier. Some people saying, well, all these teams got in from the Mountain West because they were on the coattails of San Diego State. And then the last team standing was San Diego State of the Mountain West. The best team, arguably, in the Mountain West lost to UConn by 30. Like, let that sit with you folks and let it marinate. By the way, huge matchup coming up in the Elite Eight. Clemson and Alabama played each other in the regular season and Clemson won. So, like, this is insane because if Alabama won, whoever won the other game, they played Clemson and they played Arizona in the regular season. So there's all these storylines going on. There's all these cool moments. We got four more games tonight. But Ross, let's break it down. Let's get into it here in the drive. Let's start with the game that was the closest of them all, UConn and San Diego State. What are your thoughts on this matchup between these two teams and the fact that Dutch over there coaching San Diego State and the Aztecs, he does a hell of a job. I got to interview him a bunch of times last year on his road. Love being around him. He said last night, you know, it's not just about wins and losses. It's about the journey. And if losing a basketball game is the worst thing that happens to you in your life, you got a pretty awesome life. He's a good coach. He's got morals. He's got values. It seems like he's got the right perspective on life. And I appreciate him on one side. And then you got Dan Hurley saying the S word and sitting there going like, what do you want? Like, we're a kick-ass team. I'm wearing a nice suit. We're cool. You're not. I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
I kind of like it because I get it. He put a big target on his back. And if they screw up, as big of favorites they are to win the national championship for the second year in a row, hasn't happened back-to-back champions since Florida did it in 06 and 07. So almost 20 years ago, he's putting a lot on himself. He's got to get it done. And I think he's going to. If it doesn't, they're going to tease him. The social media will go all after him. Yeah. But if you can back it up and you can be that cocky, you have every right to. But I'm like, make sure you back it up and you play hard and you get the job done. But you just got to kind of love it in a way. Like, I get it to rub people the wrong way. Let's say this has happened 3, 4, 5 years in a row and they keep winning championships, dominating. No one's close and he's this cocky. Then it might get a little tough because they're like, it's almost like you're facing like little league competition and you're a big leaguer.
Yeah.
But right now it's still fresh. It's still new. This is only the second year in a row this is happening. I kind of love it where he's like, I know we're the best. We're going to get it done. He's cocky. He backs it up every time and just got to appreciate that. Like as much as, and it also gives a target where you know, right now they're the heroes and the enemies at the same time.
Yeah.
So if someone wants to slay Goliath, by all means, go after him. He's putting himself out there. I hope someone gives them a close game, gives them a run for their money, and if they knock him off, it'll be great to be must-see TV because he's hyping up the games and how good this team is. Mike Greenberg early in the week, he kind of got ridiculed because I agree. I think he was a little crazy and too much hyperbole, saying that UConn could go in the NBA right now and dominate and win a bunch of games and go to the playoffs. I don't think that could happen because still every player in the NBA, even the ones who stink, they all were studs at the high school or college level. Yeah. But UConn is the closest thing we have right now to an NBA level team in college basketball. So as much as I know you want guys to be more under the radar, blue collar, just, you know, put your head down. We're trying our best. It's kind of cool. Not everyone I put up with this. He's a New York fellow New Yorker like myself. He's got the New York accent. His dad was a legendary high school basketball coach. His brother was a legendary high school basketball, college basketball player, and he's a good college basketball coach. And he's like, we're good. He's got that cocky New York swagger, and I just kind of dig it. So, like I said, if they lose, it's going to be egg on his face. But right now, until someone proves otherwise, he has the right to be as cocky as he wants. And, you know, as long as he's not dropping F-bombs every 2 seconds in front of the kids, maybe watching the games and press conferences, I'm still very cool with it. And I just like to see dominance and the best of the best, and that's what they are right now. And I can appreciate that. And you got to appreciate it because at some point someone's going to dethrone them, yeah. And there'll be a new person, a new team taking over. But right now, enjoy greatness while you still can.
Well, you know, and yeah, a great point and very well said. And I think the cool part is, he was having fun, you know, at the end of the game. He took one of his guys out at the end of the game, and he looked right at the player, and he was on camera, and he goes, hey, get the out of here. And so he smiled with him and stuff, and I thought that was cool. But, yeah, I mean, the UConn Huskies, listen, they're leaps and bounds above many, and it's really hard to do this. Like you said, it was the early 21st century when Florida did it. We go back farther than that to years when Coach K and Duke did it. It's not an easy thing to do. I mean, we got to go way back, you know, and John Wooden, and we go back to UCLA and their dominance. But the trip that UConn has made in today's basketball with the transfer portal and everything going on here in 2024, it's a really incredible feat, and they're now a couple steps away. You know, they're going to the Elite Eight. They win that. They go to the Final Four. Then they go to the championship game. And, you know, and then it's let's see what happens. I do think they're the best team in basketball. I have them 1, Houston 2. And, you know, I do. I think – and they're 1-2 in the tournament. You know, you got the number 1 overall seed.
Yeah. I think it would be a thrilling game. I would love to see the Houston Cougars get there and give them a run for their money. I think it would be a thrilling game. But no, I think you're probably right. Houston probably be the best team to give them a chance to knock them out. But still, as great as they are, that's the other thing you have to be impressed with. The transfer portal, one and done, all these guys going to the draft early. It's hard to keep star players there for long.
Yeah.
It's a single elimination tournament. You have one off night. It's not like the NBA where you have to win best of 7, win 4 games to win a series. You have one off night. You shoot poorly one night. You make a bad call, goes the wrong way. You could be out. So, like, it's so easy. Like, right now, UConn's so good. They are just a little bit off against a good team. They could be knocked out, and this dynasty is over before it starts. So, it's so much that has to go right, as good as they are, for them to even get to the point where they can win back-to-back and then start to sniff greatness. And a dynasty at this level, with all the limitations, like, even in college football, Nick Saban, a lot of guys are leaving college sports because they realize how hard it is to keep going year after year and contend for championships. It's yep. getting tougher with everything that's changing, with money now changing hands, and guys leaving year after year, and the changing scenery, and you have to kind of re-recruit your guys every year because they can leave after every year. So you just got to tip your cap to them. So it's even more impressive if you could have a dynasty now in college basketball than it was 50 years ago where guys weren't leaving. They were there for 4 years. There was no chance they were going to leave early.
Yeah, no, and you bring, like you said, you know, you bring up a good point, you know, we've been sitting here talking about how hard it is to build a dynasty, how hard it is to build a dynasty in today's world of collegiate athletics because of the fact of just, you know, teams not staying together and not having, You know, some team, and the thing is, I've gotten to talk to so many teams that are teams and they love each other, and that gives me so much hope and faith. And then I look at, you know, I look at some of these other teams and I say to my, and you can tell, I mean, Penny Hardaway's Memphis team, the way that they, I mean, they were being asked questions. I mean, I'm on the call and they were being asked questions for the American Athletic Conference tournament and the players were sitting there and they weren't answering questions. And like seconds were going by, a minute was going by and they were just sitting there and Penny's sitting there and they're looking at each other and they're sitting there. And it's like seeing that and seeing some of these other teams, like one coach came out and his team came out well after him. Like he didn't know where they were. Like the coach came and sat down and then the players showed up after the coach. And so you can tell some of these teams from what they appear like and how they act that there's not responsibility necessarily. And then last night with North Carolina in the segue, and like, I mean, we don't know what goes on behind closed doors, but Penny Hardaway, the guys he sat with, I was like, this is NIL. This is the transfer portal. This is not a team. Penny's done with these guys, and he's going to have to find another way with different guys. And then last night, North Carolina comes out. Hubert Davis looks pissed as all get out. And Armando Bacot sits down, and RJ Davis and Cormac Ryan. And Cormac, and I love this, and I tried to get a question in, and I didn't, but I wanted to, so I want to let North Carolina know that. Cormac said at one point, he goes, listen, you can say whatever you want to say and you're going to write what you want to write. And he was looking at the people in the media in the room. He goes, you're going to write what you want to write. You can do what you want to do, but I want to say something. He said, we wouldn't be here today. We wouldn't be who we are today if not for RJ Davis and if not for Armando Bacot and everybody. And when you look at RJ Davis, he's like, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said along the lines of, you can write whatever you want to write, but you know what the truth is. And how dare you? How dare you respect RJ? How dare you blame RJ? How dare you say anything about this team and what we've done and what we've been through? And if you want to attack these guys, you're wrong. If you want to attack these guys, we see you. If we want to attack these guys, it's just plain wrong. And I have never seen a student athlete go to bat, unsolicited even, for his teammates publicly, looking at the people that are writing the stories and saying, if you write something negative, if you put us down, if you pick on him, how dare you disrespect my guy, my teammate, a guy that I appreciate, a team that I love. If you want to come after us, I want you to look me in the eye and understand that I'm telling you to your face, I don't respect you for it. And I was like, damn. And I'll tell you this right now, that Cormac Ryan rookie card that I got, that Bowman first, that thing meant something to me. That thing might come up in the studio now and just be sitting somewhere because I got a lot of respect for a man that after a loss can turn around and look at the media and say, I know you want to write the stories you want to write, but I'm telling you which stories, if you choose to write them, are not true. And I was like,
I just love that awesome. You have you guys back and that you're a family because you see them more than you see your actual family. Every day at practice, games, road trips, you spend so much time, so much free time with them, so much time working out, conditioning, lifting weights, running, practicing, playing. For them to stick together, even when tough setbacks go their way, it's such a cool sense of maturity that you see a guy can speak like that after having a setback like that. So I just love to see when they stick together as a family and they're not going to let media or anyone tear them apart. So that's just great to see.
Yeah, no, it was extremely meaningful to me, super positive, and just a wonderful sign of teamwork. And I got to shout out the gentleman on the other side and his student athletes because I spent time interviewing Nate Oates over the last couple of years. And Alabama being a good basketball school, the SEC putting together some good basketball. People have to understand. I mean, Kentucky proved that they could play football. Alabama and Arkansas proved that they could play basketball over these last couple of years. And it's been tremendous. And I want to make a note of this. North Dakota State had Grant Nelson. Grant Nelson transferred from North Dakota State after three seasons, transferred to Alabama. He said in the postgame press conference yesterday, he put his hand on Nate Oates, the head coach. He goes, yeah, I kind of like Nate a little bit. He comes to Alabama in yesterday's game. For those of you that paid attention, even just down the stretch in the closing minutes, he scored inside when the game was tied, I believe. Then he hit a three. Then he played good defense. And on the ridiculous, like, just kind of heave over your head rainbow shot, he blocked it. He blocked the last shot in the game that didn't look like it was going anywhere, but he blocked that shot after making free throws, after making a shot inside, after hitting a three. Grant Nelson went off. And yesterday he did something that so many people are doing, and it is a healthy reminder, and I thank God for this, of telling me I'm not alone. Grant Nelson said, before anything, I thank God, and I cannot tell you. The College of Charleston, their head coach, Pat Kelsey, who's now the head coach of Louisville, how small is my world? I asked him about his faith, and you could go and watch this on youtube.com/wakeupcalldt. I asked Pat Kelsey about his faith. Well, he answered it. He said, this is probably my most favorite question ever. Thank you for the question. And where does he end up going? Louisville. So the guy who said I asked him his favorite question in his life, who has a strong faith, and me who has a strong faith, he went to, of any one of the 362 Division I schools, he leaves College of Charleston to come to Louisville. So now I get to see him in person, talk to him on the phone, talk to him face to face after having this conversation as strangers with the College of Charleston. And how funny is this? I waited since I was 9 years old to meet Damon Stoudemire, and I met him at Georgia Tech. Now he's at Georgia Tech. Met him, hugged him a bunch of times, got to talk with him, do a little mini show thing with him, and interview him numerous times, and get to tell him about my family and about my card collection and my connection to him from when I was a child. Now the guy who has a strong faith, who said I asked him his favorite question, he's coming to the same conference. So people can say they believe in God and people could say that they don't, but of all ways to have paths cross, how does Damon Stoudemire and Pat Kelsey get to me? By the grace of God. And when I saw that he went to Louisville, I went, thank you. I can't wait to talk to that man. I was like, does Louisville know that they hired him? Because they've had some immorality going on, and now they hired a man of God. Well, you know, I mean, they've tried everything else and it didn't work. So maybe it's time to actually go in the right direction with some God here. But I mean, it's stuff like that, Ross.
They've had the scandals, you know, with Bobby Petrino and Rick Pitino. They've had enough scandals, and one of their championship games, one of their national titles had to be taken away in 2013. So yeah, they definitely had scandals.
Yeah, you know, and but to see this and to see this tournament, you know, and get to talk to these guys and hear them talk about God, and Hubert Davis in the prior game, somebody asked him about, like, your team is better at this point in the season. He's like, I appreciate every point of the season because he is the reason for all seasons. And by him, I mean Jesus. And I love it so much because so many unprovoked, unsolicited, just not only love for God, but it's coming from people that aren't being asked to talk about it. And
it's impressive because it's been frowned upon in the years past. You know that.
Yeah.
Like, whether you love him or hate him, at times he definitely struggled. He was not a great quarterback. But Tim Tebow, it wasn't just attacking him what he did on the field. It was constantly attacking him, dropping to a knee, praying to God. And a lot of guys, you know, certain guys, if they're superstars, they can get away with it. Other guys, they go after guys who they think are being a little too preachy, a little too religious. And Tebow, it was not just all about what he was doing on the field, and maybe he was not quite good enough on the field. It was always going after him in his faith. So it's kind of cool, especially, I know you're a very spiritual person, that now people are able to speak on, you know, about the religious, their love for God and all that. And it's cool that you can see that now and not be, you know, persecuted and people, you know, making fun of them, which has happened a lot in the past.
Well, I mean, if crazy people are raising children, telling them that they're cats and turtles and they want litter boxes in classrooms, talking about God to me would probably be more than okay in a world that has accepted insanity as its status quo, which I never thought would come to be. So I don't, and I don't blame the kids. I don't blame children. I blame the parents. I don't know who raised them or why they are the way that they are, but your children are sponges, and you've decided to not teach your children about God and where they came from, but you've told them that they can poop in a litter box in the middle of math class. I mean, to me, there's a place for those parents, and it's a straight jacket. And for the people that believe in God that have been told to wear straight jackets, we've kindly said no. And I have all the respect in the world for those that are raising up who raised us up. And on Good Friday, that we remember those things that are so important. And even with you and I, buddy, I am Catholic, you're Jewish, we have the exact same God. And the way that we've treated each other and the way that we've treated people in general throughout our lives, for the most part, has come from that belief that even a different religion like ours is not that different. The Old Testament is the Torah, and there's so much similarity there. And, you know, and I find, and I tell people that all the time, I go, you know, when you believe in God and you believe in how you think God would treat people and how God treats people, I said, look at the people that I'm friends with. I have people that believe in God. I have people that don't know what they believe in. I have people that don't believe. And some of my closest friends are Jewish. And I just feel like this world would be so much more of a better place if we could all answer to the same God and realize that there might be different ways that we found God, but there's so much beauty in how we get there. And you and I are so similar, and we serve the same God, and we might have a difference here and there, but we've never been that different at all. I value hearing people talk about God. I value, especially in the media, because when I sit in a media room, if there's three people, if there's nine people, if there's 900 people, I feel like I could be the only person in here that believes in God. I could be one of two people. I could be the only person that believes in God and talks about it in here. Half the room might believe in God, but they're not going to say it. So when I'm in a room and Fran Brown comes to Syracuse and he talks about God, and Hubert Davis talks about God, and Grant Nelson talks about God, and Pat Kelsey talks about God, and I'm hearing all of this, that to me means, and PJ Hall, when I interviewed him last night, he talks about God. When I'm surrounded by that, it takes the media that treats me like an outsider and looks at them and goes, oh no, honey, there's more of us than you think. We just might not always scream it like you scream you're crazy, but we're here. And the media has become synonymous with anti-God, anti-morals, anti-truth, anti-respect, anti-anything good has been the media. And I don't fit the media by definition, but I sure as heck am so happy that as I don't fit the media and I'm so okay not fitting the media because I believe in God, if that's going to be the thing that detaches me, then detach me every day. But to know that there's other people in this sports world and in this entertainment world that believe in the same God I believe in and have taken a stage that is internationally getting exposure and have stood there with all pride and all faith and said, I want to give everything to God and I don't want to give it to myself. That to me has been such a humbling moment in 2024 to hear one person talk about God, let alone the majority of people that I've interviewed.
Yeah, I just got to imagine because you were saying, like, a lot of people in the media, you know, in the past have teased you and everything, and you feel like an outsider, and, like, you know, what, you know, do I belong? You're in the media, but you can change it for the better and, you know, just be yourself. You don't have to worry about pretending that you're someone you're not. You don't have to, like, you know, you shouldn't have to hide your religious freedom. As long as you're not forcing it upon anyone, you should be able to, you know, speak your mind, and so should these athletes and coaches. So I'm glad that you feel a connection to them and that they're making you feel more at home, that you're not just an outsider and you can feel a kinship to them. So that's nice that you've been able to find that in some of these big sports figures.
Yeah.
You know, encourage them to speak up.
Hey, well, because a lot of us believe in God. We just, we don't feel as welcome as maybe we used to, but, you know, now more than ever, we have to give it up to the Most High. With that being said, before we jump out of here, speaking of giving it up to the Most High, PJ Hall did that, like I said, and Clemson defeated Arizona. Am I surprised?
No.
Am I thrown off?
No.
Is the ACC good?
Yes.
How do I know it's good?
Because it's been good the last 3 years that they've been disrespected.
How do I know that they win?
Because they do.
How do I know they can hang with the nation?
Because they have.
How do I know that these teams that are not ranked are really good in the middle and lower part of the ACC?
Because when the ACC plays each other, just like when the Big East, the old Big East used to play each other, and now arguably the new Big East too. The worst team in the Big East back in the day could beat the best team. And the worst team in the ACC, Georgia Tech, beat Duke and North Carolina this year. And Georgia Tech is not in the tournament, and they had a losing record. Clemson beat North Carolina this year, and now Clemson's the only one left in the bracket that had them in North Carolina. So the reality of it all...
The true definition of insanity, if you keep repeating the same thing over and over again and expect different results. Arizona finds a way to choke every time.
Every year.
Besides the 1 year they won the national title, I think in 97 with Lute Olson, that was a long time ago. Titanic was the number one movie in the world back then. That's almost three decades ago. Arizona fails in the tournament year after year, whether they're number one seed, whether they're a lock they think to be the Final Four or be a champion, they can't get it done. And people still put them as a high seed. They expect them to win. It did not shock me at all that Clemson was able to beat them, and I love the Syracuse connection, that Gerard was able to come through, and no one really thought Clemson would have a chance. Clemson, to this day, is still considered more of a football school, that they're a juggernaut football with their head coach and win all the championships, and, you know, of course, Trevor Lawrence and Sean Watson and all that. But basketball, they played well. They're in the Elite Eight. And it would be something. If they can get to the Final Four, it would be just an amazing run. But it was an impressive win, but not shock me. Arizona, just like at times, you know, Purdue's still in it. Purdue, I'd see, is vulnerable to an upset. Arizona was definitely ready to be upset last night. So I was not shocked at all. They did not make it deep into this tournament.
Yeah, you know, and, I mean, last night was not Ursher, baby, because it wasn't for the A. And Clemson doing what they did. I mean, again, not so. I mean, Arizona, if they're a one seed, it doesn't matter if they're a two seed. They're Arizona, Wisconsin, and in most cases, Purdue are the ones. Yeah, where I'm like, I can't buy into it with those teams. And Arizona, I mean, you know, listen, congratulations on their season. Congratulations on their work. You know, Tommy Lloyd and everybody, congratulations to the Arizona Wildcats. But in my opinion, was I surprised? No. And why was I not surprised? Because people don't understand the ACC is really good. When you see, this is what I can't understand about our nation. If enough people say something, people go, okay. If they told you that putting on a chicken suit would prevent you from getting COVID, chicken suits would be sold out on Amazon.com. Yep. That's reality. Okay? That's reality of what we live in today's society. So the NCAA selection committee has said the ACC is trash. Not necessarily saying the words, but they have displayed it in their actions, and they've been proven wrong over and over and over and over again. Well, here's the interesting thing about Clemson beating Arizona and Illinois beating Iowa State. Clemson's colors include orange. Illinois' colors include orange. Two former Syracuse Orange players, Joe Girard III of Clemson and Quincy Guerrier of Illinois, are both going to the Elite Eight in orange, but not Syracuse orange. And I put that post up fully knowing that some people are going to be like, I hate you, Dan. But it's the truth. The reality of it all is two former Syracuse Orange players that transferred out of the program are not only in the Elite Eight, but they're still wearing orange. Because what I want Syracuse fans to understand, what I want you to really get, is that the transfer portal has been a B to Syracuse. They've lost three guys, four guys, five guys. They continue to lose guys in the portal. But I want you to understand your place in the loss of those guys. This is my hometown. I've spent, since I was a little kid, in the Dome. I've been in the...
Right. Daily basis, so you better be careful.
Well, listen,
I don't want to see these people on a daily basis that I'm about to mention anyways. There's a difference between fan and fanatic. There's a difference between a person who loves their team and a person who hates their wife and decided to come to a game today. So I want to let you all know this, and I want to be very clear because I've talked about this on my show for years. There's a difference between a fan and a fanatic. A fan will support you even when they're frustrated with you. A fanatic will put liquid cheese in their hair and think that it's hairspray. So I want you to fully understand me when I say these words. If you want to know why guys are transferring from Syracuse and you think you're not involved, I'm going to share with you that Syracuse has the like number one, number two, number three, God knows how many of the records of most on campus for a college basketball game in the entire nation. 30,000, 34,000, 35,000, 36,000, so on and 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 so on. Okay. With you having the largest crowd, you have also booed your own players. You booed Trevor Cooney. You booed Joe Girard. You have booed so many. You booed Justin Taylor, who's in the transfer portal. So I want people to understand something when we have this conversation. I'm not saying you're the reason why Syracuse players are leaving, but you don't help when you boo your own players. You know they play half the season on the road, right? You know they play half the season getting booed and having people scream at them and say horrible, obscene things. When you're yelling out the F word and you're booing guys in the starting lineup when they're getting announced in the starting lineup, when you're verbally and when you're personally attacking people that are your team, your players, I want you to picture if the next time you eat dinner with your mom, she pokes you in the eye with a fork and she tells you you've amounted to nothing and you're a really crappy person. Because that's what it feels like to get attacked at home. So I'm not saying that Syracuse's influx of guys going to the transfer portal is the fault of fanatics, but I will say you don't help your team when you're booing your own players more than they're getting booed on the road when they're playing it at home. How are you treating them in class? And the thing is, the student section was the one with the most obscene comments. I mean, us in the media were looking at the student section toward the end of the season going like, that's enough. Like, it's enough.
What they do in the pros, but right. These are young 18, 19, 20 year old men. These are student athletes, so it's pretty sick. It's bad to do it to a pro athlete, but I can understand to a degree because they're making millions and millions of dollars. But it's pretty sick to be doing that to amateur athletes who maybe are making a little bit of money now with the new money that's infiltrated in college sports, but nothing like a professional athlete for you to be that nasty to them. And you're right. Like, you're maybe saying it's not the main reason, but it's not the reason that some of these guys are leaving.
Yeah.
And Fran Brown, who's such a great recruiter, just coming from Georgia and now Syracuse's football coach, I hope it's not going to ruin his chance here because he's brought in so much talent here to Syracuse. But if guys get really negative toward fans get very negative to his players, we'll see how many people jump ship. So I'm hoping that doesn't destroy his rebuilding process, Syracuse basketball. And all these other schools that are, you know, Syracuse just finished their first year under a new coach now that Boeheim's gone. You hope it doesn't destroy their ability to build up a program back to prominence. I definitely get what you're saying. Like, you're allowed to boo, but I also don't think you have to be overly negative, when especially it's a college athlete, and you should be somewhat supportive at home. And at least you don't have to boo during, like, starting lineups. It's one thing if they play poorly, you can boo a little bit after the game. But yeah, to boo during starting lineups before the game even started, That to me is a little extreme. And if people are saying really nasty comments that are personal, that's when it's gone too far, especially if anyone brings in family members or anything like that.
Yeah.
These are guys working hard, and they're mostly 18, 19-year-old, barely adults, who are trying their best for university. So it's pretty sick if someone's going to go after them like that.
Yeah, and the thing is like, I mean, the guys hear it, and the guys know it, and it's really, it's just disrespectful. So, I mean, if those fanatics want to boo me, okay, we're never going to eat dinner together. We're never going to sleep in the same bed. And
Taylor Swift song, we're never getting back together.
Yeah, we're never getting back together, you know? And so, I mean, my thing is just be kind. You know, what do they say? If you can't be anything, be kind. So I just, yeah.
That was what Mr. Rogers always preached.
Yeah. If you can't be anything, be kind. Just don't be a crappy person. It's not hard to not be a crappy person. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not a difficult thing to not be a crappy person. So, you know, just stop and be kind and be loving and be hospitable and be warm and, you know, just find your way to just be a good person. And it's not a difficult thing to do. I have something that popped up on my phone. I got to make mention of this because it's now official. I've been waiting for any type of official word, because if it's not my source, I won't put it out, because I mean, unless I feel confident in something, I'm not going to put it out. Let me say it that way. And so this morning, just now, John Wildhack, the athletics director at Syracuse University, put out this. I want to congratulate Jerry McNamara on his hiring as the men's basketball coach at Siena College. There are very few individuals who have contributed to our men's basketball program and all of Orange Nation as dramatically as Jerry has. He displayed an unmatched competitive desire as a student athlete at Syracuse, and for the past 15 years, he has shared his passion for and knowledge of the game with our student athletes as a coach. I, along with all my colleagues in Syracuse Athletics, wish Jerry, Katie, and their family the best as they embark on this new opportunity. Jerry McNamara is now officially the head coach for the Siena Saints, and they're not that far away, baby girl. They're in Albany. So,
I'm excited. You know, I lived in Scranton for 15 years. I played in college ball at Marywood for baseball with some of the guys who played basketball at Bishop Hannon High School. They won state championships. City of Scranton, they love him. He could run for mayor of Scranton, he'd win in a landslide in 2 seconds without even campaigning. He is, you know, godly here. You know, it's a little bit further away from Scranton now, but I lived in Scranton for a number of years, for over a decade and a half. He is beloved, and it's exciting that he's going to get this opportunity. I remember the bus trips that would come to Syracuse to watch him play, and he was with that team as a freshman, fellow freshman with Carmelo Anthony, that won that national title in 2003. With Jim Boeheim, finally got off the schneid, won that first national title for Syracuse basketball. Been an assistant coach for years. I would have loved for him to get the job at Syracuse one day, but, you know, they just hired a new coach this past season. It would have taken a while. He was named, you know, the associated assistant coach, the main assistant coach, but it's nice. He's going to get a chance to be a head basketball coach, run a program at Siena, and I'm just thrilled for him and his family. I hope he does a great job, builds that program up, a small little school that, hey, maybe they could sneak into the tournament and be a dangerous team come March Madness in the years to come. So, thrilling. He's a young guy. He's only like 41 years old. He is one of the all-time great players in March Madness kind of history with the three-point shooting. Someone joked in the screen area, he was like Stephen Curry back in the day before Stephen Curry was anything. Like, yeah, that's what he was like. He was pulling up three-pointers from ungodly areas in the basketball court. And he's beloved, and I'm thrilled for him that he got this opportunity. I heard the rumors. I'm glad you got to finally give the official word. But congrats to Jerry McNamara, and I know a lot of people in Syracuse and Scranton are going to be very happy about this. It would have been great if he one day was Syracuse's coach. Who knows, one day in the future if he is. But it's great he's getting this opportunity to lead a program.
Yeah, you know, and I love my time with him. First time I met him was in Scranton when I was working at 630, 1240, and 96.1 FM, that ESPN. It's when I started the Dan Tortora show, which became Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. And he came in to where I was, came into the office. And I said to him, I said, come here. And he came over, and I had in the corner, I had all of my logos of the teams that I support. And I said, I got my Syracuse logo sitting right here. And then I talked to him about the fact that, like, when he came to Syracuse, when he came to my hometown, I went to his. When he came to Syracuse to go to school, I went to Marywood to, you know, like, so as we were shift, so like when they won in 2003, so I was finishing up high school. And so when he came to Syracuse to win a championship, I obviously he was there after that. I was, you know, shifting over to Scranton, to his hometown, to go to Marywood. So, you know, I've gotten to know him over the years. It's crazy to think the guy that I watched win a national championship for my city is the guy that I then met just a little while later, is a guy that I have the phone number of, who I've interviewed a bunch of times, who I've shook hands with and talked to after a game. Sienna, you're getting a heck of a coach. You're getting someone who I think's got a upward trajectory. I think this is the beginning of his coaching career when it comes to being a head coach. I think he's going to have tremendous success. I think that this is a twinkle in what his career is going to look like.
I'm still disappointed and, he had a legit chance in the NBA. He tried out with
teams. Well, no, but I thought what you said.
I thought he could be the NBA. Yeah, he's right. A solid player. As a 3-point specialist. Yeah. I think he could have played in the league for a few years. He played in Europe for a little while. He played in summer leagues.
Yeah, I thought what you said, though, but like I said, he was Steph before Steph, because they're like, okay, well, Jerry shoots threes. What else does he do? And I'm like, well, Steph doesn't play defense. So, like, you know, I mean, at least Jerry plays some defense. Yeah.
Yeah. Guys fire up 3-pointers, and a lot of guys do not make them at the rate that McNamara made them.
No, so I said, like, if Steph, and I've literally said this forever. I said, if Steph Curry gets a chance in the NBA, Jerry should have had a chance in the NBA. Steph hit it at the right time when Jerry, you know, wasn't given that opportunity. But I'm ecstatic. I'm happy for Jerry. If for those of you that wondered, why didn't I put a report out? I was waiting to hear some confirmation from someone that I can trust within it. And that's why you haven't heard from me. I won't just throw out things willy-nilly hoping that it sticks. So, you know, that...
Yeah. I wonder when it's going to become official. I was curious what your thoughts are on the big move.
Yeah. So I'm ecstatic for Jerry. I'm selfishly happy that Albany is a couple hours away. And I'm also selfishly excited because I could go see him. So shout out to Jerry. Shout out to the McNamara family. Shout out to all those buses that came up from Scranton. Yeah. Shout out to mom and dad who came to every game. Shout out to, you know, his wife who is at every single game, and to his children, and to everything he just brought to my city. He's made this city his city too. And, you know, I think Jerry, you know, I think I can do this as born and raised in Syracuse. I can officially knight Jerry as a Syracuse native. And a Scranton native. Yeah, so you got the Scranton. I can give you the Syracuse one. I think I do have authority for that. And yeah, man, I'm super proud and I'm super excited and I'm really happy. And I've been waiting to, like I said, be able to confirm that for people. So good stuff for Jerry. Super proud of him. Can't wait to see what he's going to do. Can't wait to go see him coach. And because of Jerry, I'm going to buy something Sienna related. So it's your fault, Jerry. I want you to know when I spend money at the bookstore, it's because of you. And I can't wait. So all that good stuff. Super proud of him. Really awesome. And beyond that, man, I'm happy for the drive. We're driving you through the tournament here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. Myself and Ross Turetsky for many years driving you through the tournament since 2011.
Two more days on Easter Sunday, we will know the final four teams that remain. And so it is rapidly moving quickly, this tournament. Final four is going to be here real soon. And then next weekend, down to the final four, and it's going to be exciting to see what happens. But the tournament is flying by way too fast. And on the women's side, I want to mention Caitlin Clark. Want to see where that journey ends up?
She's in Albany right now. She's in Albany.
Yeah. Does she finally redeem Iowa and her chances to win a national title before she goes to the WNBA? Going to be the number one pick. And Ice Cube was offering her like $5 million to join the Big Three league that he runs. So, like, Caitlin Clark, will there be a rematch with Angel Reese and her, LSU, the defending national champions? It's going to be great to see. So the women's side is thrilling too. And Caitlin Clark has brought so much excitement to college basketball. She's on both the men and women's side. She's the number one star right now in this tournament. So that's been exciting to see, and I'm glad she's getting her due, and I hope she has a great career in the WNBA. I think she's such an amazing talent. So I'd love to see her, you know, selfishly as a sportsman, I'd love to see her get to the championship and see if she can cut down the nets when it's all said and done.
She's my favorite player on the woman's side. I think she's my favorite college basketball player in general right now. And
you have to say women's side. Yeah. Like,
Now, I think she won. I'm saying she's definitely my favorite player on the women's side, but I think she's my favorite player in basketball right now in the college world. I'm getting my collection going of my Caitlin Clarks. I'm still looking for an auto, but I got Caitlin Hajmahalis. Haj is going out to see her play in Albany. Paige Critella, she's going out to see her play in Albany. And, you know, your boy's thinking about it. I'm itching. The only thing that can stop me is that, you know, like when I get my word that I got to go to certain things, like I got to make those things happen because I said I was going to do them. So if I can make it work around the things that I promised, then your boy.
Just clone yourself, buddy. Problem solved. Michael Keaton made a movie many years ago. I saw it in 1996, Multiplicity. He cloned himself multiple times. He could be the greatest husband and father ever because he could be many places, you know, 7-8 places at once. And it was, to me, I still love that movie, Multiplicity. Check that out. Clone yourself and problem solved. You can be everywhere and at all times.
Well, I can tell you somebody that was somewhere last night, Kurt Warner, wearing an Arizona Diamondbacks jersey, throwing out the first pitch. Thank you, Kurt. I already liked you. Now I like you more. So he's risen up on my like meter. So good stuff from Kurt Warner, big time. It's nice to know.
He's a man of faith. And watch his Kurt Warner movie that came out a few years ago. Definitely a man of faith and has overcome so many obstacles to be an NFL Hall of Fame player and now a broadcaster and you know, a heck of a human being, it seems.
Yeah, so shout out to Kurt Warner. Happy that you know what, you know, the proper clothes to wear. And shout out to Jerry McNamara for staying in the state of New York. Much appreciation for that. And, you know, I'm excited. I'm excited for Jerry. I'm excited for the Diamondbacks. I'm excited for your Yankees. I'm excited to find the rest of the four games. And let's go, baby. And I have this in the studio here, too. And I'm ecstatic. The second autograph I've ever pulled from Bowman U. And I've never seen this refractor. This refractor looks like electromagnetic waves is on it. So you can see the kind of, well, hopefully you could see, but it's a refractor that like creates these lines and stuff. But if you look very closely, I got an autograph of Gonzaga Bulldog Dusty Stromer. And nice. I want nothing more. Maybe I figured it out. I was like, if I don't pick Gonzaga, they'll win. But Gonzaga, the Bulldogs play tonight. So much is going on tonight. We got Tennessee going up against Creighton. A lot of respect for Creighton. A lot of respect for Tennessee. We got the Zags going up against Purdue. And everybody's talking about Zach Edey. And they're forgetting about Mark Few and the crew. Love them. And then we got Houston Duke, which could be a very interesting game. And then we have NC mother freaking State, baby. We got NC State who's going out there doing their thing and so proud of what's going on with NC State. And so they got their matchup tonight, and the Wolfpack will have another opportunity to try and make some history here as NC State will be going on. And we got, I mean, all the games that are going on tonight, so excited. Four games. Well, let me hit this really quick before you do it. Let me hit this really quick. NC State Marquette makes me really sad because I have respect for Kevin Keats and I've had love for over a decade for Shaka. So, I mean, the part that stinks here is that the Big East and the ACC have proven that they were disrespected and they've proven that they're the best conferences in basketball again. And one of them has to knock the other one out tonight with NC State and Marquette. And I'm not happy about it, but my bracket's in really good shape. And I'm going to say this against my bracket. I hope Gonzaga and Creighton win. I really do, because that would be a really cool game for America. And it's nothing against Tennessee and it's nothing against Purdue. If they win, it's totally fine. I'm just saying, for me, I think there'd be a little fairy tale there if Creighton played Gonzaga.
I think it would be great. As little small underdog teams that now become darlings in the tournament year after year, I think that'd be great. I like Shaka. Shaka Smart. I think he's going to get it done tonight. I think they're going to win. I think Purdue is definitely going down. I know I'm a little too cocky about that, but I think Purdue, they've gotten the Sweet 16. much better than last year, getting knocked out in the first round by a 16 seed. I think they're going down tonight. I think the Zags, Mark Few, baby, they're going to get it done. I think Gonzaga wins. And, hey, one more thing.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, forget about baseball. You're a diehard football fan besides the NFL draft and free agency and all that craziness. The United Football League. If you're a psychopath football fan, you have the XFL and USFL combined, and their two champions are going to go head-to-head. I think Houston and San Antonio, they're going to go head-to-head, doubleheader on Saturday. I think there's even Sunday games. United Football League comes back. And I know my kids want me to say going to see King Kong, Godzilla, and there's a baby King Kong now in the movie, so that's another thing on the agenda. We did see Ghostbusters this week. I know you saw it too. It wasn't great, but I thought it was pretty entertaining, though.
No, Ghostbusters was good. I thought Ghostbusters was a good movie. I was excited to see it, and I'm going to go see it again. But no, I was a fan of it. I'm putting up here on our social media so you have everything about Jerry McNamara. These are my words that I put up here if you would like to know, folks. I put, Jerry McNamara is the new head coach of the Siena Saints men's basketball program heading to Albany, New York, just a couple hours from Syracuse. Attached are words from Syracuse AD John Wildhack from the university. God bless Jerry. You know I appreciate you. So, Jerry, I don't have to miss you that much. Because if I reach out far enough, I can touch Albany. So I don't have to miss him, and that's what makes me really, really excited. Is that I'm not going to be without Mr. McNamara. He's going to be very close by. But Siena, again, you're getting a great coach tonight. We're going to see some absolutely amazing, incredible basketball going on. I can't wait for it. Will anybody blow out a team, or will it just be UConn and nobody else? Everybody played to 1 to 2 possessions. UConn won this game 3 weeks ago. So, it's exciting. It's interesting. It's fun. I can't wait. This has been The Drive with myself and Ross Turetsky speaking on the 2024 NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Tournament, brought to you by the place where you can drive away with a new vehicle or used today, and you can buy or lease, at Great Lakes Honda City on 7140 Henry Clay Boulevard in Liverpool, New York. Let them know the DT sent you. Ross, as always, I appreciate you. We got to break news. We got to have some fun with all this. We're going to see some awesome basketball tonight. I am very confident in that. And, I should have picked Gonzaga. That's one thing I should have done. I'm happy with everything that I've done, except for not picking Creighton or Gonzaga. So we'll see what happens from here. I'm excited for it either way. And I got 3 of my Final Four still alive. So we'll see how we shake out here. My two teams playing in the championship are alive. Let's see if Houston survives a scare with Duke, or if they can handle that game. And can anybody beat the UConn Huskies is the big question. Right now I say no, but we shall see. I appreciate you, brother. I'm happy for your Yankees. Happy opening baseball. Syracuse Mets open today. Happy just being an awesome person and being a great dad. Thank you for joining me with The Drive, and I love you dearly, and happy Luzerne County Community College baseball season as well.
Absolutely. And one more thing. Jamie! I give a good Jamie. Have a nice Easter holiday. I appreciate it. Hope you have a good time with your family, and thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And hasta la vista, baby.
We'll talk with you soon. God bless, and appreciate you as always, buddy. Take care. That coming from Ross Turetsky here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, where sports truly meets that thing called life. And with that being said, here on Wake Up Call, we're going to take a quick step aside for a fast break. We'll wrap up the show right after this, spending almost an extra hour with you today. We'll be back right after this.